Hey, are you bothered?
Oh, please don't even.
You frazzled?
Don't be a moron.
It's Monday, so get your thoughts together and mouth off.
Do it!
Call or text DC and J. Ross right now. 339-1140, 1-800-920-1140, or text 44-1140 and mouth off.
All right, welcome back into the show, Jason Ross. No Doug Christie today. He should be back with us tomorrow. He's taking care of a few things today, so we look forward to DC being back. Was off all last week. It was truly fun, as I was saying in our last segment, an opportunity. First time ever as an adult, at least. I went in as an RV as a kid, but 8-day trip, RV across, basically went to Mount Rushmore and Crazy Horse, some monuments out there, saw some incredible wildlife, national parks and different things, and Devil's Tower. We went through Nevada, Utah, Wyoming, South Dakota, and then on the way back through Yellowstone, and just amazing, amazing stuff. Grand Tetons. There's a lot of this world. It's beautiful. A lot of amazing places, and it was really cool to go with family and drive in the RV, and different experience for sure. Felt like the Griswolds from vacation, but it was fun. It was a really good time. Good to be back as well as we continue on. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, we're going to jump back into the NBA Finals. Now that it's a 2-1 series in favor of Phoenix, but Milwaukee gets the most recent win, and we'll see if they can make it very interesting with a win on Wednesday. So we got to wait a couple days there. And also going to tell you about a team to really watch this offseason, a team that I've been talking about that I will say, worried about in the sense of how much more damage I think they can do and how much better I think they can get. And there's already been some hints on what they're working on. So that'll be coming up at the bottom of the hour. But I want to get into the first half of the baseball season, right? We've reached technically what we call the midpoint because you've reached the All-Star break. They have played more than half the games. If you look at some of the best stories of the first half, no doubt it's got to be the Giants. I mean, it is amazing what this team has done and continues to do. They went into the break with a 4-game win streak. They're 25 games above 500. 25 games. If you think about that for perspective, Arizona has 26 wins. Who else is in the 20s? Baltimore has 28 wins. The Giants are 25 games above 500. Never saw that coming. They've been good on the road. They've been good at home. They got a good run differential. Their pitching has been great. I think they truly have been one of the surprises. The Dodgers are certainly playing a lot better now, but the Giants are still 2 games clear of them. The Padres haven't really disappointed. They're 6 back. They're 13 games above 500. That division is still stacked in the bottom, I feel, for Colorado and Arizona because they're just getting crushed by those other teams on a regular basis. Your other surprises, I think the Red Sox have been a surprise. They got a great record in the AL East. I thought Tampa would be the best team in there, and maybe the Yankees threatened for that, but the Yankees would go in the disappointing column. I think you also have to put in the Cardinals as a disappointing team. They're always good, and they're 2 games below 500. They've had some injuries. And the Braves. I actually like the Braves to win the National League this year, and are they 500? They're 1 under .500, 44-45. Certainly not out of it, only 4 back of the Mets. And if you that's kind of another way to look at it, though, is look at the divisions. Giants, 2-game lead on the Dodgers. In the Central, Milwaukee is 4 up. On the Reds, and then 8 up on the Cubs and the Cards. So that's been a bit of a surprise there. The Mets, 3.5 clear of the Phillies. In the American League, the Red Sox, 1.5 ahead of Tampa Bay. In the Central, the White Sox already 8 games up. And that, you know, we've seen divisions turn around, but the White Sox are looking really good now. And the Astros have really been consistent. They are 3.5 ahead of the A's. The A's are 52-40. They did win the last 2 going into the break. For me, the A's have had good starting pitching. Bullpen's been a question. The lineups have been a little inconsistent. They've had pockets of the year where they've had guys carry the team. They need longer stretches of all of that, but I think Laureano, when he's fully healthy, completes that lineup much more. Every team has had injuries. When he was out, that hurt them. That kind of got them going in the negative direction. And also the other thing to watch for them is when they play the better teams in the American League, how will they fare? So they've got the separation from the Mariners, though I'm glad Doug's not here today to tell me that the Mariners are ahead of the Yankees because he'd be right. While I was gone, the Yankees didn't do too well, including yesterday. They had a nice lead on the Astros and then got walked off by Altuve. But the Mariners, 5 above .500. Below that, the Angels are 1 above, and then Texas has been the worst team. They're 20 below. So The A's just have to keep things going. If they can avoid the wild card situation, that would be ideal for them because that's what they've been in the last couple of years, and it's just it's a scary proposition. You want to win the division. You want to be in a spot where you feel most secure and get into a series, but we'll see ultimately what the second half will do. The A's, 12 games above 500. What will they do to add to that roster? I still think if they could find another consistent bat and then certainly bullpen help, I think would give the A's their best chance to have a strong second half. A couple other things from the first half that are of note. We talked about him earlier, but Shohei Ohtani, I think just the marvel that he is, the season that he's having, the boost that hopefully it's giving baseball. But there's different beliefs on him and what he's done. But his statistical year, if you look at what he's done right now, with 33 home runs, 70 runs knocked in, he is batting .279, and he's just hit some bombs for home runs. I mean, just incredible. And he's given them innings as a pitcher. He's been able to start 13 games, has 4 wins, 1 loss. I know he got roughed up a couple of different times, but he's been pretty consistently good. And as we mentioned before with the All-Star game, tomorrow he's going to lead off, he'll DH, and he's going to be the starting pitcher. I mean, I just think that's giving the sport something to talk about, someone to talk about. But again, the interesting thing is most people would tell you the best player in baseball is Mike Trout. He's on the Angels. Shohei Ohtani's having the best season in baseball. He's on the Angels. They're both in Los Angeles. They're not the Dodgers, but is it giving the boost that the sport needs? Sometimes you need to do it for longer, kind of like Jay said earlier. More repetition, more names. Ideally, you do that in the postseason. You get way more attention, but this is what the All-Star Home Run Derby is for. This is what the All-Star Game is for. It's a showcase. It's to get these names, get these people seen, and to become more popular, more household names. And I think Shohei Ohtani is definitely doing that. Some other notes from the first half that I found interesting. You have 3 pitchers. We've all been talking about Jacob DeGrom, but there are 3 pitchers right now with an ERA under 2. That used to never happen. And I know the league is becoming more and more about strikeout or home run, but to have 3 pitchers with an ERA under 2 is amazing at the halfway point. You've got DeGrom at 1.08, Gausman from the Giants at 1.73, and Lance Lynn's at 1.99. You also have Woodruff, who's right there at 2.06. Just amazing individual pitching seasons that we're seeing. And so that's got to reflect on the other side, which right now, this day and age, we only have 14 hitters, between both leagues, only 14 that have an average above 300. And the game has changed. I don't know if that part's for the good or for the bad. Vlad Guerrero Jr. is batting .332. Nick Castellanos is batting .331. But, I mean, you had years where guys were chasing 400, right? The Olerudes, the Gwynns, the Boggs.
The Nomars.
What was his best average year? Did he have a year?
I think it was that year. I think he finished around 360.
For Nomar, 380. Did he win the title? He had to win the batting title, didn't he? Or did someone get him? Let's see. Nomar Garcia Parra. You're going with 360, Chris?
366.
Let's see his best batting. Ooh. In 2000, he batted, after he batted 357 in 99, he backed that up with a 372.
Oh.
In 2000. He had a great season.
I want to say he was around 400 in September.
Was he really?
Yeah.
Terrible September.
Awful.
Awful. But it's changed to have 3 pitchers under ERA under 2 and have only 14 hitters with an average above 300. So things to watch in the second half, some roster movement, some trades, who kind of gets positioned onto different teams. And then certainly we will look at the other things like the Yankees, the Braves, and the Cardinals, teams that were expected to be good. What kind of turnaround can they have in the second half? All right, when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about the All-Star game, also the Home Run Derby tonight. But something that I was doing a little research on in the All-Star game that I think I've been proven wrong on this, but I want to get Jay and Chris's perspective on it as well. We'll do that when we come back right here on KHDK. Hey, Capital Casino is now open again with their outdoor gaming venue at 411 North 16th Street in Sacramento. Back here on KHDK, Jason Ross. No DC. Doug Christie will be back with us tomorrow as we continue to roll along here. The Home Run Derby is going to be coming up. We'll keep you up to date on that. Be rooting for Matt Olson. By the way, Chris, our over-under today on KHDK.com is what?
It's an easy one.
Yeah?
Shohei Ohtani.
Okay.
Or the field in tonight's Home Run Derby.
That's easy, huh?
Very easy.
Okay. Well, a quick check on that. It is 50% for Shohei and 50% for the field right now.
50% of the people are wrong.
Which way is Chris going? Based on your love for Shohei Ohtani, I think you think it's easy for Shohei. He is the one seed in this, for whatever that means. He will go in against Soto in the bracket.
Some are calling him the Patrick Mahomes of baseball.
Some. Very true.
I'm hearing people say it.
Yes. So I was telling you this before the show too, Chris, and I'd be curious on Jay's opinion on this. When I saw the, you know, I was gone last week, and so, you know, I knew what some of the votes were looking like, but I saw the All-Star starting lineup come out for each side. And then I looked at it, Jay, and I went, okay, I mean, there's not, the lineup's good. There's good players. Like, National League, they officially have the lineup and position in order and everything. Tomorrow it'll be Tatis, Max Muncy, Nolan Arenado, that's batting 1-2-3, Freddie Freeman, Nick Castellanos, Jesse Winker, JT Realmuto, Brian Reynolds, and then Adam Frazier. And I went, exactly.
Yeah.
And I went, wait, All-Star game?
No Shohei there.
Yeah,
that was the NL, but yeah.
Let's go AL. Shohei Ohtani, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Xander Bogaerts, Aaron Judge, Rafael Devers, Marcus Semien, Salvador Perez, Teoscar Hernandez, and Cedric Mullins. And
more star power.
A little more,
yep.
But I felt like, okay, gosh, when I was a kid, it was Gary Carter, Johnny Bench, Sandberg, Ripken, Gwynn, Boggs, George Brett, like Hall of Famers up and down the lineup. More, that's what I thought.
More star power in the fact that baseball was more popular.
Probably more popular, but it just felt like, I go, there was Hall of Famers at every position. So I said, you know what, let me look at this to validate it.
Okay.
So I just picked 1980. I was going to go back from 80 and go like every 5 years. I'm going to read you guys the lineups for each league and think, okay, look at all, there's going to be littered. I'm going to tell these guys, all nine players are Hall of Famers. All right, so 1980. By the way, it was won, the All-Stars National League won it 4-2 at Dodger Stadium, whatever that's worth. Your American League starting lineup, Carlton Fisk, Hall of Famer.
Yep.
Rod Carew, Hall of Famer.
Hall of Famer.
Willie Randolph, not a Hall of Famer.
No.
Greg Nettles, not a Hall of Famer. Should be. Bucky Dent, not a Hall of Famer.
Hall of Famer.
Ben Ogilvie, not a Hall of Famer. Yeah, Ben Ogilvie. Fred Lynn, not a Hall of Famer. Reggie Jackson, Hall of Famer. So four in the AL. I'm like, okay. Let me get to that National League. Johnny Bench, there's one. Steve Garvey, nope. Davey Lopes, nope. Ken Reitz,
nope.
Bill Russell,
nope.
Dave Kingman,
Hall of Famer.
Yeah. Dave Kingman, Reggie Smith, and Dave Parker.
Yeah, good luck. The Snake, the Cobra.
They had one.
Yeah.
I said, okay, I swear. Let me go to 85, so skip 5 years.
Okay.
And I look at this, I go, okay, here we go. I see the American League, and I see Jack Morris, starting pitcher, Hall of Famer. Carlton Fisk again, Hall of Famer. Eddie Murray, Hall of Famer. I don't think Lou Whitaker is. I think he's always close. Or did he make it?
Him and Trammell always.
I think Trammell made it.
Yeah, get a little.
I can't remember.
I don't think he is. Yeah. I don't think Lou is, but I may be wrong.
George Brett, Hall of Famer. Cal Ripken, Hall of Famer. Jim Rice, Hall of Famer. Ricky Henderson, Hall of Famer. Dave Winfield. So everybody but Trammell. I mean, but Whitaker.
Yeah.
That's stacked.
That is stacked.
National League. Terry Kennedy, who? Steve Garvey, Tom Herr,
who?
Greg Nettles again, now as a Padre. Ozzie Smith, he made it. Yep. Tony Gwynn made it.
Yep.
And then you get Dale Murphy and Daryl Strawberry.
Dale Murphy and Strawberry still had a little oomph to them,
though. Yep. So that was 85. I go, gosh, I felt like. But the American League was pretty stacked.
Yeah, they were juiced.
90. This is about your wheelhouse now. We're getting closer.
Starting to get a little closer.
Okay. Bob Welch pitching.
Bobby.
Is that for the A's?
Uh-huh. Yeah, baby. Bobby.
Sandy Alomar.
Sandy's not in.
Nope. Mark McGuire, not in.
Not in.
Steve Sachs, local guy, not in. Wade Boggs is in. Ripken is in. Ricky Henderson is in. Griffey is in. And Jose Canseco, not in.
You mean to tell me Jose Canseco's not a Hall of Famer?
He's not in, right?
Oh, okay. No, I'm just playing.
National League, Jack Armstrong was pitching with Mike Socia, Will Clark, Ryan Sandberg's a Hall of Famer, Chris Szabo.
Chris Szabo at third base with the goggles.
He's got him. Ozzie Smith, Kevin Mitchell, Lenny Dykstra, and Andre Dawson. So you had Dawson and Ozzie Smith.
Man, too.
So I'm like, you know, it does sneak in where you find these other guys. Let's see, 95?
Okay. I'm going to venture to say there's a bunch of Hall of Famers 95.
All right. I think you're pretty good here. Randy Johnson.
Yeah.
Pudge.
Yeah.
2-for-2. Frank Thomas. Yep. 3-for-3. Carlos Baerga. No, but he was really good.
He was.
Wade Boggs, yep.
Griffey.
Not a starter. Why was he not a starter? Was
he hurt?
Ripken?
Hurt, okay.
Albert Bell? Nope.
Nope.
Lofton? Nope.
Nope.
Kirby? Yes.
Puck?
Edgar Martinez? Yes.
Yeah.
In the NL, Hideo Nomo, Mike Piazza, he's a Hall of Famer. Fred McGriff, I feel like should be, but it's not. Biggio's in.
Yeah.
Vinny Castilla.
Oof.
Barry Larkin, he's in the Hall. Barry Bonds. Lenny Dykstra. Man, Dykstra started a couple
Lenny
times.
Lenny getting his thing in, isn't he?
Tony Gwynn, and then Ron Gant.
Ron Gant. Love Ron. Ron's a good dude.
Yeah.
Still works down there for the Braves. Does some minor league stuff. Him, Brian Jordan. Ron Gant.
2000, what do you think? We got David Wells.
I'm going to say no.
Pudge Rodriguez.
Okay.
Jason Giambi.
Okay.
Roberto Alomar, he's in.
Yeah.
Travis Fryman.
Oof.
Derek Jeter.
Is that a Cleveland Indian year? Who was that? What did he play for?
Yes.
Yeah.
Cleveland. Good for you. Good pull. Carl Everett.
Oof.
Bernie Williams.
Boston Red Sox. Carl Everett. That year?
Yep.
He got in? Okay.
Bernie with the Yankees and Jermaine Dye with the Royals. None of the outfielders were Hall of Famers.
No. Bernie's got to be close, though.
Yeah, but didn't
he
get
hasn't
it.
Gotten in, but Jermaine Dye, local.
NL, Randy Johnson, Jason Kendall, Andres Galarraga, Jeff Kent, Chipper Jones Hall of Famer, Barry Larkin Hall of Famer, Vlad Guerrero Hall of Famer, Jim Edmonds, and Sammy Sosa.
Mm.
So I guess it is kind of a few Hall of Famers every time. That's 2000. Let me give you a couple more. 2005.
Some of these guys about to be just finished.
Wow, Mark Burley started. Jason Veritek, Mark Teixeira, Brian Roberts.
Man,
Alex
base.
Rodriguez would be, but he's not.
Yeah.
Miguel Tejada, Manny Ramirez, Johnny Damon, Vlad Guerrero, and David Ortiz.
So two.
Nationally, Chris Carpenter, Mike Piazza, he's in. Derek Lee, Jeff Kent, Aramis Ramirez, David Eckstein.
Man.
Carlos Beltran, Jim Edmonds, Bobby Abreu, and Albert Pujols. Pujols will be one.
Still, yeah. So waited. There wasn't any. Did I miss one?
Not really.
Man.
And then you go to 2000. I'll do 2010 as well. Oh, my. Who's this? Ubaldo Jimenez started for the NL.
Really?
With Yadier Molina, Albert Pujols, Martin Prado, David Wright, Hanley Ramirez, Ryan Braun, Andre Ethier, Corey Hart.
Wow.
And Ryan Howard.
Corey Hart for the Brewers?
Yep.
Yeah.
And then the AL, David Price, Joe Mauer, Miguel Cabrera, Robinson Cano, Evan Longoria, Derek Jeter, Carl Crawford, Josh Hamilton, Ichiro, and Vladimir Guerrero.
There's some good names in there. Not sure how many become a Hall of Famer.
So.
That's interesting.
Fernando Tatis Jr., Max Muncy, Nolan Arenado, Freddie Freeman. I mean, career-wise, Freeman is tracking it, I guess.
Maybe.
Arenado would, I mean, he's done it more years than Tatis, right? Yep. Muncy, I don't think so at this moment. The other guys, no. Winker, Realmuto, Reynolds, and Frazier.
Too new.
American League, Shohei Ohtani, Vladimir Guerrero, Xander Bogaerts, Aaron Judge, Rafael Devers, Marcus Semien, Salvador Perez, Teoscar Hernandez, and Cedric Mullins.
No one's guaranteed yet. No one's close to being guaranteed.
But didn't it feel like it was just like all around the diamond there were
felt like
Hall
it.
Of Famers?
Yeah.
So maybe it's
it's interesting.
It's just standard. Like, you know, the year where I'm reading all those guys and there's Ken Reitz. I'm like, why is he in the All-Star? But he had a great year that year.
Yeah, I couldn't even tell you who that is.
Tom Herr, Chris Sabo, like good players.
Okay.
But it's just they had the season or got voted in by fans. They're popular players.
It's according to the masses who Chris has heard that Shohei is Pat Mahomes of baseball. Is he in the Hall of Fame yet, Chris? Are these same people saying that he's going to be in the Hall of Fame?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
And Shohei Ohtani watch right now. Apparently in batting practice, he hit a fourth decker.
They're in the right place for him to do this in Colorado.
No, he's going to.
So are you more impressed by, like, if someone were to hit 40 or they hit one that was like, are you kidding me? It went where?
40.
I want to see.
The distance one?
I want to see it get out of the stadium.
What's the stadium? Is it Fenway that they have one red seat for somebody that hit?
Oh, Ted Williams.
Ted Williams?
Yeah.
Yeah.
To get up there and hit 40 bombs in a basically a batting practice, that's crazy.
Is it still the same where it's 10 outs? Basically, anything that you swing at that doesn't go over is an out.
I believe so.
Yeah.
They've changed the rule so many times.
Well, I was looking up some of the history of the Home Run Derby. There was one year where someone won with three, and a bunch of guys had zero. I'm like, did they get two cuts at it, or what was the I mean, this was years
there's
ago.
There's been timed, you know, time rounds. There's, yeah. I remember Griffey winning one where there was a gold ball that counted for two or something. You know, there's so many, which is fine. I'm all
right
with the All-Star game, and we talked about this last week. Give me the rocking jock. Give me out of the blue, wild, something going on.
Yeah.
Can you hit a home run with a metal bat? Can you, you know, those type of things. How far can you hit a golf ball? Or, you know, a golf ball would hurt someone. But you get what I'm saying? Give me something a little bit different. I'm with that.
Yeah, I'm trying to look at some of the past. 1989 at Anaheim Stadium, Eric Davis won with three.
ED in the third, in the last round? Or
it looks like three total. I don't know how this is. I'm looking at past. I hope it's the last round.
Yeah, I hope so.
But I think as they've added rounds, now you see the home run totals going way up.
40 bombs in one AB batting practice.
Well, because like the one year was it Josh Hamilton, I think, hit 28 yeah. in like the first or second round.
Oh, boy.
And then lost.
He's burnt out.
Yeah. And I thought they didn't add the cumulative. It was just he advanced.
Well, he should have won.
Yeah.
He had
way more than
60
everybody.
60 bombs altogether. Almost.
Here's another year. Garrett Anderson hit 9 in the finals to 8 for Albert Pujols. But Pujols hit 26. Overall, Anderson at 22, but one.
Garrett Anderson has won a – man, I forgot about that. Of the Angels, was he playing?
Yeah.
Okay.
Here's some – since 2000, here's your home run derby winners. I don't even remember how many. Sammy Sosa, Luis Gonzalez, Jason Giambi, Garrett Anderson, Miguel Tejada, Bobby Abreu, Ryan Howard, Vladimir Guerrero, Justin Morneau, Prince Fielder, David Ortiz, Robinson Cano. I remember that. Prince Fielder, Cespedes went back-to-back, Todd Frazier, Stanton, Judge, Bryce Harper, Pete Alonso. So some big names there. It's like good names getting
Garrett Anderson contest. Sticks out like
yes,
a thorn.
He does. That's Brent Berry winning the dunk contest. All right, break time for us. When we come back into the NBA Finals and some NBA notes, and that team I'm telling you to watch out for next season. They're already good, and I think they can get even better. I'll explain that and more on how is Giannis doing this. We'll do that when we come back here on KHDK. Capital Casino is now open again with their outdoor gaming venue at 411 North 16th Street in Sacramento. Jason Ross, Doug Christie, no DC today. He'll be back with us tomorrow. It's a big week ahead for golf. You get the final major of the year at the Open, the British Open. Again, all our British Open coverage is brought to you by Naturewood, where it's all about choices and always about quality. We'll have reports throughout the week and certainly leaderboard updates as we get to Thursday and Friday. But a lot more on the NBA as we continue five on it to start the next hour. Still have the crossover and much more to get to. We'll also keep you up to date on the Home Run Derby, which is scheduled to start around 5 o'clock. It's a good showcase. It's a fun event. And I think, you know, with the field, we'll see what Matt Olson could do. But you never know who might. You get the defending champ, Pete Alonso. But other names that could surprise, and certainly a lot of people want to check out Shohei Ohtani, who, as Chris said, was hitting some bombs in BP. So the ticket prices, it was a good ticket to get. I think it's going to be a fun park to have it in Coors Field. And we're going to see the ball flying out of there. So I think it's going to be a good show coming up later tonight. A couple other things basketball-wise. Wanted to jump back into the NBA Finals and a few things, but heard or saw this from Woj just a little bit ago. Phoenix Suns assistant Willie Green has emerged as a strong front runner for the Pelicans' head coaching position. And if that's the case, nothing against Willie Green. He might do a great job. He's kind of been a guy in waiting. He's been around a good couple of coaches and good couple of programs. I was so certain. I really was. I thought this was going to be the offseason that we might even get two or three females as head coaches in the NBA. I know Becky Hammond has always been the one that's kind of been in front and center and been targeted and seemed like the first one most likely to. Had an opportunity in Portland, was ultimately seemingly the second choice, but you could be the 10th choice if you're not selected. It doesn't really matter the position there, but she was in a spot, someone they were looking at. Kara Lawson, with her connections to Brad Stevens, who hired her as an assistant, also with her connections in D.C. with the Wizards, being an analyst there, and then I know she had some connections in New Orleans as well. I thought between one of those three spots, she could possibly become the first female head coach in the NBA. And then Teresa Witherspoon was talked about quite a bit in New Orleans and still isn't out of it, but if Willie Green gets it, I just thought there were multiple candidates there, and this was probably going to be the offseason that it happened. But as of now, it looks like that won't be the case, but we shall wait and see. Before we jump back into the finals, I was saying and kind of been talking about a team that I don't know if I would say worried about. That's not the right phrasing to say it, because they've been good. They've been consistently good, and they had down a couple of years here for a couple of reasons. But I just think you really have to watch this offseason of the Golden State Warriors. I think they, with the way their roster is constructed, the aggressive nature that Bob Myers has generally taken in the past, Joe Lacob, you know, what is the quote he had a few years ago? Light years ahead. I just think they've got the assets. They've got the ability and to do something significant, not just to be, hey, look out for the Warriors. No, to be a team that's looked at like the Brooklyn Nets with a big three of Harden, Kyrie, and KD. I mean, I think Brooklyn, part of what I was debating with Doug a lot this year was, and he calls me a Kyrie hater. I'm not the biggest fan of Kyrie. I can acknowledge how great he is. But I thought those three were going to be trouble for the league, and they were. They weren't healthy enough this year, and ultimately that caught up to them. But a full season of playing together, an offseason of getting the exact pieces to fit with them, I think Brooklyn might have a couple-year run here of either being the champion or in the finals. I mean, they're just that talented. So I kind of was rooting against them this year, just not to get it done right away. But I could see Harden, Kyrie, and KD winning a couple. I honestly could. But here's where the Warriors are in such a good spot to me, and I really think we got to pay attention to what they have and what they can become. I mean, they've already got Steph. You got it, and this is all under the prerequisite that Klay Thompson returns to the great two-way player that he was, and I think he will be. I know Doug predicted that and predicted it beautifully with Kevin Durant, who has come back from that injury and looked the exact same, if not even better. Just amazing. So Steph's been great, will be great. Draymond fits for them. Klay, if we kind of go off those three, I don't know what they're going to do with Wiseman, but you're either going forward with him, or if you move him, you're moving him into some other great piece. Wiggins, I could see as a player they would like to move, if possible. If not, again, now if you're talking about him being your fourth or fifth option, that means you've got a great team. So I think your movable pieces are Wiggins, who's got big money, and Wiseman, just because he's young and, you know, a great potential future. And then you look at having two picks in the draft in the first round. What are they picking? 7th and 14th. So I know there was some talk today on the internet, on Twitter, on different things about how the Warriors have been talking about Damian Lillard, and I would do it if you can. I don't know what it would cost. I don't know if Portland's even remotely interested. But that type of move, a Damian Lillard, a huge asset from another team to make the Warriors not only just better, but legitimate contenders again. They don't have forever here on Steph. He's still got more game. He's still got more years to go, but he doesn't have 10 years left. He's got years left, though. He's got one more year on his contract. I know he wants to retire as a Warrior. I think you got to do everything in your best interest for him, for your organization, to be as competitive in these next couple of years with him to be a title contender. And I think they've got the pieces to do it. Some other, you know, nothing that's going to, you know, cinch deals, but could be sweeteners, right? You got guys like Looney, Pascal, Juan Toscano-Anderson, just little pieces that aren't the overall generator of a deal, but with Wiseman, with Wiggins, with draft picks, this is the team to watch. Or if they stick with the draft and draft, again, I don't like that they're drafting ahead of the Kings, but they could do some serious damage with two draft picks as well. So I think this is a team to watch. I think they were good this year. Could be really good next year if Klay's healthy and they get that other piece that really solidifies a good coaching staff, a championship team. That's the team I'm going to watch a lot for this offseason. Again, the draft is coming up in, 2 weeks? NBA draft. So the Kings will be on the clock here in just a couple of weeks. All right, let's go back to the finals. Last night, as I told to Jay and Chris earlier, I did not have the chance or even really the ability to see games or one or two. Read about them. Phoenix was impressive. And the takeaway I have from the first two games, Phoenix role players have been good I think throughout this series. But when Ayton, Paul, and Booker have all been collectively good, they're tough to beat. And I think the same thing can happen with Milwaukee. When Giannis, when Middleton, and Holiday are all good, they're tough to beat. Yesterday, those three played better. And then you're seeing stuff from Connaughton, from Portis. You know, their role players were doing some nice things for Milwaukee. And as this series goes along, you start to look at matchups. I think one of the things to watch for is the injury to Dario Saric. Certainly not the most important player for Phoenix, but you could see a drop-off in depth for the Suns when Ayton was in foul trouble last night. When he goes in foul trouble, Phoenix went smaller, and I totally understood why. Giannis played more aggressive and played some bully ball, and they didn't have an answer for him. And it is so amazing how much of this league right now is a propensity to go small and get out of what you do a lot during the regular season, but people want to switch everything. And Milwaukee is bigger. They're kind of bigger across the board, even when they go small. Longer. I don't know if they're more athletic, but they're a long team. They can be a long team. And I think there's some advantages when that happens. If Ayton can stay on the floor, and what I'm waiting for is Ayton, Booker, and Paul, along with Giannis, Middleton, and Holiday to all play great. I think we're going to get a fantastic game, maybe a fantastic series if that can go the rest of the way, no matter how many games that is. If that's five and Phoenix gets through, they could all be great games the last three. If it's six or seven and we've got an even series or a Milwaukee comeback all the way, I think there's a lot of things to like about this series, a lot of things to be enjoying. And the one that I'm still marveling at the most is Giannis. I just, the way he's come back, the way he's played, the way he's looked. And I didn't think this was a guy that was, if he was going to play in the finals, was going to be a shell of himself. He has put together back-to-back 40-plus games and been absolutely amazing. And here's Giannis talking about watching the games before that he missed.
Even though I'm not 100% yet, but I have a chance to come back and play, and I was extremely happy. And I knew that watching my teammates play, you know, good basketball, and it gave me a chance to, you know, come back. And at the end of the day, that's all I can ask for.
He's been great. I mean, that's the reality of that. The series is, you know, a lot of times when we look at the breakdowns of these series, and that's why I asked the question going into the break, who's the better team? That's generally how I pick series and how I pick finals or how I pick games. I look at it and say, well, one, you always have to look at the health. And, you know, these injuries that are maybe more around the fringes of Saric. And then I thought Torrey Craig might be out. He did bounce back and play in game three. DiVincenzo would help Milwaukee. He's out. We don't have the Giannis injury or the Chris Paul injury or Booker. So, you know, if that were to happen, then certainly the elements would change there. But when I watch this and see, it's really tough to tell who is the better team. So if Phoenix plays their best game, if Milwaukee plays their best game, who's better? And we haven't seen that happen in a game yet. And it might matter who's at home or who has the last late run. But I think this is a really hard series to pick even now. And I said earlier, you know, Chris picked the Suns in four. Doug had the Suns in six. They both could be right on who could win this. Doug may get the games right. Jay and I had the Bucks. I had him in six. Jay had him in seven. It's really what Phoenix has been good at this postseason and great at, really. I mentioned earlier the injuries that have happened to other teams. That's not even the point anymore. They've taken advantage of that, and they've been good. They deserve to be where they are. They have done a great job of controlling the series, if that makes sense. They win game ones. They usually have the lead in series, so the other teams are chasing them. What were they up? The only one they've been down was 2-1 to the Lakers, and that's the one I thought they were most vulnerable in. There's an injury. They take advantage of it. They win the rest of the series, and they move on. They were always ahead of Denver, never lost a game in that series. They had the lead on the Clippers, right? A 2-0 lead. Then it was 2-1. That game four was critical, but Phoenix got it, right? And then 3-1 going home, but you have a cushion. They lost that. Oh, no, what are they doing? 3-2. Yeah, they go back to L.A. and win in game six. So they have dictated the terms of the series more often than the other. Now, on the other side, the Bucks have been playing chase a lot of these series. So they've been in this role. They were down 0-2 to the Nets, a team that, you know, I just bragged about how good they can be when they're right. They were down 0-1 to the Hawks and just kind of messed around with the Hawks and then even had the Giannis injury, and they look like they actually might be in trouble. So here they are. I don't know if they figure things out as series go along a little bit more, if they need to take a few punches. It's not usually the best idea, but it's 2-1. Phoenix still has control of the series, but game four is everything to me in this series. It's such a critical game. And the other part of where this is now in the game-by-game situation, who is the team that lost the last one that we're looking at, Phoenix, and what do they have to do differently? Now, a lot of people are saying, well, Booker was way off. That's not the normal game that he's going to play, and I would agree. I think they've done a pretty good job of putting Holiday on Chris Paul lately, and his turnovers are up. They did that after game one. So it's like Coach Bud needs to see some things sometimes before he gets to a spot that I think we all think they should play in. So it takes Milwaukee longer than I think it should to figure out their adjustments, but they've ultimately adjusted on a couple of things. The Booker part is interesting because that game was likely over yesterday, but Monty Williams elected to not bring him back in and just kind of let him sit and let him maybe think, contemplate. I don't know, but they had a sideline conversation, and here Booker was asked about that.
Yeah, Devin, I saw Monty put his arm around you at the end of the third quarter. What was the message that he was trying to tell you? How were you, you know, feeling at that point?
I mean, I wouldn't mean to be like that, but that's between me and Coach. And we have that relationship, so we keep that in-house.
Yeah, and I respect that. I don't know if it was any earth-shattering thing, but that's a guy who's played a lot of basketball. He's played more games than he ever has at a time and didn't have his best night, was defended well. To me, honestly, missed shots that he can make. It wasn't like he was forcing things. He just wasn't knocking them down, make or miss league, right? He wasn't hitting his typical type of shots. So the thought is maybe get him a little agitated, get him fired up, get him motivated, which he should be anyway. We're in the finals here, and I'd anticipate him having a better shooting game. I thought what was one of the telling things in the game yesterday specifically was the third quarter, because it still is anybody game at that point, and Phoenix was making everything, yet they were losing ground. The shooting percentage was abnormally high in the third quarter, and they ultimately got into a spot where they started to miss a couple, and the Bucks just couldn't be stopped. Like we said, Giannis playing downhill, Giannis playing comfortably, Giannis getting in a position that he couldn't be stopped, and even the proverbial wall that people build against Giannis, he was getting to the line, he was making his free throws, he was setting up other players. He was in just an incredible spot, and Coach Bud talked about Giannis and his Game 3 performance.
He's just doing whatever it takes to help his team, to help us. You know, he's in an aggressive mindset. He always plays that way, but I thought he played with the pass well, made some great reads, found guys, played against the zone. He just did a little bit of everything, offensive boards, putbacks. We need a lot from him, and that's what he does.
Well, he gave it to them. He was great. He was incredible in Game 3. I think when you go to best player on the floor, it's him. Now, he has limitations, which is amazing that he's the best player with some holes in his game. Not a lot of them, but the jump shot is a flaw, and his free throw shooting can be a problem. It was great yesterday, specifically in Game 3. And foul shooting was a topic. Fouls, the number of attempts was an issue. Here's Monty Williams being asked about that.
I'm not going to get into the complaining publicly about fouls. Just not going to do that. But you can look, you know, we had 16 free throws tonight. One person had 17. So, you know, DA is, we got to learn from that. We got to beat guys to the spot. And he'll grow from this. I promise you he will.
All right. So we'll see. That's DeAndre Ayton. So the less they can expose him, I thought Frank Kaminsky looked lost at times when he's put in that spot that maybe Saric would play. We're talking about filler pieces, but that are important. You look at Game 2 where a guy like Mikal Bridges was so great for Phoenix. You need each team's big three, but someone else. You're not going to get all the role players because it just doesn't happen. Like yesterday, I thought Cam Johnson was good, Jay Crowder was good, Paul and Ayton were good, Booker was off. The big three are more important, and then can you get a couple of role players on either team to give you a little bit more than you expect? Is it Lopez? Is it Connaughton? Is it Tucker? Is it those other guys I mentioned on Phoenix? So, again, I won't say we're this far into the series, but three games. Phoenix is up 2-1, Again, I ask the question still. I don't know at this point who is the better team. I think the Bucks have the best player. I think, you know, if we take the big three, I'd probably, if you're drafting him, you're probably drafting Giannis first. I don't know if you're taking Paul or Booker second or third, but it's one of the two probably. Then you get to Middleton or Holiday, and then Ayton. So, I mean, it's I think it's even. I really do. It's a 2-1 advantage. Phoenix is in the better position. They've got the one-game lead. They've been good at playing with leads. They've got two more games at home. They don't have to win a road game, and they don't. Their crowd is amazing. I thought the Bucks crowd was really good. And, you know, watching all of this, again, back trying to relate all of this back to Sacramento, Phoenix doesn't even have to win at all to show that it can be done, a quick turnaround. It really is abnormal, though. I want everybody to understand that that's rare. And I think historically when we've watched some of the finals teams before, I feel like they've looked like league juggernauts. That I felt like the gap between them and the Kings was so much. Like, oh, man, the Kings can't beat this LeBron-led team or this Warrior team in a series or this Miami Heat team or this Laker team. I don't know. I watch Phoenix and Milwaukee, and I don't see generational greatness out there, but I see good teams, really good teams that deserve to be where they are, that have found their way through the journey that is the postseason, and they're the ones standing, and they don't have to apologize for any of that. Now, for Sacramento to get it right, it's continuing to draft well, continuing to develop the players they currently have, making the right trades, and then getting some breaks of their own and trying to sort out this roster. I mean, Phoenix had the same kind of years and years and years in the lottery like the Kings, but it's the picks like Booker and Ayton that they've grown and developed. But they, you know, they took their Dragon Benders and their guys that they missed out on. Marquise Chris, who technically the Kings have, but, you know, they traded for him and they were trying to build around them. Didn't happen. And it's the addition of Paul, of Crowder, also developing guys like Bridges and Saric, just getting the right pieces ultimately around that they've added, and Monty Williams. It's been a great story, and hopefully we continue to have more, like a longer, I'm really rooting for a longer NBA Finals to decide who ultimately will be the champs. All right, the Home Run Derby's coming up. We'll keep you up to date on that when it gets started. When we come back, the final hour, we will have five on it. We also will go over the ESPN polled the NFL execs, and they picked the top 10 quarterbacks in the league. We'll tell you what that list looks like and the crossover all in our final hour coming up here on KHTK.